Welcome to Add to Party, a friendship simulator masquerading as a news show. I'm your host, James Hartwell, and I'm joined by
Andy Kay,
and I'm joined by
Derek Gostiha.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. I just learned this is episode 259.
It's not episode 259. It's like episode 108 or something like that.
For some reason the podcast manager says it's 250 something. So guys, we've got to spend a lot of time together. This is really special. How many weeks is 259?
Well, we've been doing the podcast for 2+ years.
Okay. So Andy, to answer your question, 259 weeks is 259 weeks.
How dare you? Listen, sometimes I don't think through my whole sentences. That's 5 years.
That's right. We've been doing because of, by that logic, we've been doing the podcast longer than COVID.
That's true. Oh, and that's really special. Something I'm thankful for.
What else? Are you thankful for your Tamagotchi?
James discovered I had a Tamagotchi. Here, okay, 90s kids, listen to this. I don't know if you remember that, but that's the very annoying sound to do literally anything on a Gen 1 handheld Tamagotchi. I have been inspired, reflective, and throwing myself into nostalgia, buying a Tamagotchi. They reissued it.
I was like, did you just find your old one or something like
that? No. I did find my old Pocket Pikachu, but that thing sucks because it depends on the pedometer, and the pedometer is trash. So I can't use my Pocket Pikachu. But I bought a Tamagotchi. They're like $20, and there's like a billion different varieties.
That feels like too much money
for it a Tamagotchi. Is,
but oh my god, what happened? The Pocket Pikachu Tamagotchi and the Digimon Digivice all came back in the same year.
The Pocket Pikachu I found. Okay. That one I got when I was in grade school, and I found it when I was Marie Kondoing way back when. And I tried to resurrect it. I tried to use it. I made a commitment to my health and fitness, and the pedometer didn't work. So I stopped and gained weight. So it's Pikachu's fault that I gained weight.
Explain what a Tamagotchi is for someone who's born after 1990.
Okay. Well, you see, you have this digital device. Mm-hmm. It has multiple digital timers where that when they run out, it is supposed to be a trigger for it to change behavior, like – if it hasn't been fed in a while, it'll act hungry. If you don't walk it, you know, you're standing still for too long, it'll get angry. It's really stupid when you describe it, but it was a cultural revolution.
It was. And mine's not even smart enough to have a pedometer in it, or at least any type of thing, to realize that I'm standing still. But when I had it, when it first came out, I was like fourth grade. Everyone had it. They were impossible to find, and they banned it at my school because, again, it sounds like this over and over. Imagine a whole classroom of children just trying to clean the poop, feed it, and play with it. It was a nightmare.
Somebody just got triggered.
Yes, yeah, somebody just got triggered. Well, when I first started.
Yeah, I found out why the Digivice came back.
Why is that?
It's made by Tamagotchi.
Oh.
The Digimon?
Yeah, so the Digimon Digivice was the Tamagotchi, but you could fight your buddies, Digimon, and see who's the best Digimon trainer, or whatever the hell the term is.
Listen, much more interactive and useful than a Tamagotchi. This thing does barely anything, but it was a marvel for 20, 25 years ago.
Did it have the same 20-pixel LCD screen?
Yep. Yep, that I have to like tilt to get like enough contrast to read it. It's nostalgic. It's annoying. But God bless its heart because it goes to bed around 8:30. So he's going to be going to bed pretty soon. But I've been raising him. There's a mechanic of discipline in the instruction manual that under certain conditions, basically, if he's being a brat, you discipline him. If I don't discipline him, it says he'll grow up to be ugly. So, guys, there's your life lesson. If you don't obey, if you don't submit, you're going to be ugly. So, don't be a beta.
Conformist Japan teaching the real lessons.
Exactly. Exactly. Also, the lore of a Tamagotchi is that they're aliens who have been in eggs for millions of years. And then they woke up on Earth and then we take care of them. And if we do a bad job, they go back to their home.
Okay, let's be real. The lore is put out commercials before Christmas and kids are just begging their parents to buy them.
I was going to say, isn't this the lore of Scientology?
Oh, it might be. Oh, my God. Yeah, they really got to young people then. And I think you're right. But that's actually why a Tamagotchi is egg-shaped. Because the alien has been in there for a million years. And then you got to take care of him.
By the way, Andy, I do remember my Tamagotchi memory now.
Yeah.
I had to unlock it. I was playing it at my great uncle's funeral.
Oh my God. That beeping at a funeral?
I mean, actually, it wasn't a funeral. It was the wake. But yeah.
Sure.
I mean, I was probably under 10, so.
Yeah, probably, you know, and maybe by then everybody was so desensitized. I wonder if there was a satanic panic around Tamagotchis.
No.
They're aliens from a different world, millions of years. Demons they are. That's what I'm hearing. And I can tell you what, don't spend $20 on it, because all I can think about is I'm going to be bored with it in a couple more days and then it's in a landfill. And I feel really bad for owning this. Ooh, speaking of landfills, let me tell you about my newest deep dive. And I'm curious if you have been struck by this bug. So in my YouTube journey of trying to stop using it, but just complaining about it, I have fallen down another hole, of keyboards, like computer keyboards. Did you know there's a whole hobby around keyboards?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I've got my VTuber keycaps sitting above my head waiting to be
used. Hold on. In what way? Because we've talked about the mechanical keyboard religion times before. Is this a step further?
So this isn't like they don't do it like they used to 80s IBM keyboard tryhards. This is like buying. Oh, my God. There's so many parts to a keyboard, you guys. There's like a base and then there's the switches and then there's the keycaps and you're supposed to like lube your switches. Didn't know about that. And then you're supposed to – there's like brake hacking, or was it force breaking your keyboard for like adding like insulation and then like back taping them. And then there's all different kinds. There's all different kinds of switching. Have you ever heard of the word thawk?
Yeah.
Yes, but I can't remember what it means.
So thawk, it's almost hard to describe. And I don't know if it's exclusive to the keyboard world, but essentially there's three types of switches: linear, tactile, and something else. I forget what it is. But all of them make different kinds of noises, right? And thawking is not like a sharp click or has resistive feedback, but instead it's like a it's almost like you're hitting the switch and it's hitting like a pillow or something. But there's like a dead resonance to it. And I mean it like in a positive way. It's like a very satisfying, like low thump to each key. And I wonder if that's what thawk is. It's thumping or something. I don't know. But I don't have a thawky keyboard.
Yeah. But Andy, the third one you're thinking of is clicky.
Clicky. Okay.
Which is my preference.
Have you thawked before though, Derek?
So. Keyboard sound is broken up into volume, pitch, and depth.
Ooh.
Okay, so I think thok is supposed to be for like low depth sounds.
Okay, makes sense. I think I might be a thoker, but my keyboard, Derek, I think is like yours. It's a clicky. I just went to Best Buy and I bought, I was like, I just want a Logitech keyboard. And I thought I was getting a nice one. Turns out it's absolute trash compared to in the keyboard world. Throw it away, garbage. And I thought I had a really nice keyboard. But now as I'm typing on it, I'm just like, well, this isn't, what's that?
What brand is it?
It's just the Logitech Pro 10 keyless.
Oh, I mean, the Logitech. So yes, trash.
No, I really like it. I thought I had a really nice keyboard. It was like $80. Yeah,
Logitech's a really good entry level.
Yeah. Well, in the keyboard world, $80 is like dust in the wind. It's nothing. It's nothing. It is this huge, scary hobby.
I think I spent like $130 on my keyboard.
Okay. So that's still around. I mean, it's a lot of money, but that's like entry level. But again, your keyboard's trash. We're doing it wrong.
No, I have a good keyboard. Although I had to, I have SteelSeries. But I remember when I got this keyboard, I got the cherry red switches, Andy.
Okay. So,
which in your research, did you learn about red switches?
I've heard like the name cherry red. I don't actually know what it means.
Yeah, so if you get a gaming laptop, it's almost 100% going to be cherry reds.
I hate cherry red. So it has to do with the amount of distance that you have to press the key for it to register.
Okay.
So like basically like it takes so little energy to like press the key so that it registers. So like when you're gaming, ooh, you're not losing those precious milliseconds, ooh, from the time. But what I learned was that when I leave my fingers on the keyboard, that even just that little bit of heft of my finger on the key was enough to push down on it and trigger it when I didn't want to.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh,
so like, you know, if you're holding WASD, as it were, like my finger on A, even though I wasn't pressing it, just the weight of my finger being there was enough to occasionally press that way and make me move or something like that.
And you wouldn't know other than your character moving or the A being typed on something. There's no click telling you that it registered.
Yep. I did. I went down to Browns, I think, but I found to be what I liked.
So if you like Browns a lot, look into a Topre. I'm mispronouncing it easily. Topre. Topre switches. They're Browns, but very thocky.
Ooh.
Oh, but I don't need the thockiness though.
Yes, you
I enjoy that people don't necessarily have to hear me typing.
Oh, everybody hears me type. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Although then they think I'm taking notes. So,
I mean, it's probably not that bad. Like, I don't think we've ever complained about you typing during this. If I type without muting myself, y'all hear it 100%.
Well, I'm not usually typing during this, but here, one second. This is, well, here,
yes, I can't. Yes, we hear it.
Yeah, we hear it.
Yeah, isn't that terrible?
No.
Aren't you embarrassed for me? Imagine if it was a thok.
I don't think, maybe Andy didn't hear that because he was talking.
Oh, I hear that.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it?
No, it's not.
All right, let's see. Can you hear mine?
No.
Nope.
That might just be because the noise gate on my mic is correctly set up.
Oh, are you saying mine isn't? I've got a little screen on it.
I have a little screen on mine, too.
So
it's the same screen that's probably on your Tamagotchi.
Probably. Oh, that poor guy. So wait, Derek, you're deep in this hobby then.
No.
Yeah.
I never owned more than two keyboards.
What do you mean I never, like at the same time?
Yeah.
Why do you have two keyboards at the same time?
If I want to have a better experience for something.
Wait, why do you sacrifice your experience?
So, why don't you have one keyboard?
Because if I'm actually typing and not gaming, I'd want an ergonomic keyboard.
Oh,
do you have the one that's like split down the middle?
No.
Oh.
No, but yeah, cheapo Logitech right now that I'm wishing to die because I got my VTuber keycaps.
Yeah.
And it would look disgusting on this keyboard.
What VTuber, Derek?
Various. Chrome?
What's
are they the kind of
various.
Are they the kind of keycaps that don't even have the fucking letters on them so you don't know what you're typing unless you're...
I'll send a picture right now.
Ooh.
You can also just answer my question.
No!
Because no one on the podcast is going to see the picture.
We're
going to
describe it to them.
It's a combination.
That's my favorite. People get new keyboards and they get keycaps that don't have the letters and numbers on them. And then they realize they don't know their keyboard well enough to type without them.
So it has all the numbers, all the letters. It has symbols for each of the VTubers for control, windows, slash, command, alt, shift, caps lock, tab. And then otherwise, and escape. Everything else is perfectly laid out like a normal keyboard.
And reasonable, useful, and functional. Well, I need new keycaps too then. Oh, this looks nice. Listeners at home. Oh, it's not even like waifu pictures on here.
No, it's just like the VTubers tend to have some kayfabe, which is like some made up bullshit lore. And they drop it after the first month, but it's nice to have something to just, you can have a symbol that represents them and slap that on a keyboard.
Yeah.
Derek, is that katakana? What is that?
That is, I think katakana, aside from the normal Roman. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's a little blurry, but that's katakana.
Yeah, so listeners at home, it's a very pleasant layout. There's accented colors of a light blue, and it looks like a light purple. And then just symbols of the VTubers. I think this is beautiful, Derek.
Derek, you know katakana?
I know some of it. Like,
oh.
I'm very verbal. I tried one summer to learning it, and I just didn't stick to it.
God bless, Derek.
God bless. Well, he's ahead of all of us in our customization game. I'm trash. And the whole reason I brought it up in terms of things ending up in a landfill, all I can see in the keyboard hobbyist community is you just get new stuff and throw away stuff. Like, it just seems so...
I mean, that's most consumer electronic hobbies. Yeah.
So I have to disagree. There's a big push of people getting pegboards and other things and creating keyboard walls. And some people who have a different keyboard for the day of the week.
Oh,
like they collect them.
Oh, like
who have too much money. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
There's something called debt. Okay.
Oh, you don't have to tell me about that.
There's something called. Well, I don't want to collect keyboards. They don't bring me joy, but the fact that I can't get a Thocky one, and then I found out mine don't have replaceable switches, and now I'm just sitting here thinking I'm doing everything wrong, and I need to get that thought out of my head, because I don't want to go down this rabbit hole. It is wasteful. It is expensive. It is stupid, but I want a Thocky keyboard. And then what do you do with your old keyboard? Ugh.
Throw it in the trash.
No, I really don't want to put anything. It's breaking my heart that this Tamagotchi is going to end up in the trash.
Break it with a hammer. That'll be satisfying.
That might be. I just, like, I don't want to display it. I don't know, you guys. It's
okay. Do you want you want to buy a keyboard because you want to feel like you have a premium product? You can still keep your current one as a backup for. What if you spill a drink on it and then you would be completely out of a keyboard until someone new one came?
Yeah, I've spilled so many drinks on this keyboard. It's trucking along.
I've never spilled a drink on a keyboard.
Well, that's okay.
La-di-da, Mr. Better Than Me.
I didn't mean it like that.
Sure you didn't.
But Andy, if you keep it down to two only, that's not wasteful. That's being like forward thinking.
But then you got to store the other one somewhere. Where am I going to put it?
I guess I do actually have another keyboard. I have a wireless keyboard somewhere. in this house that I use for my NAS box, but that's, I don't consider that a second keyboard.
But Andy, do you have a budget that you want, that you have for a keyboard?
I don't even know. I don't know how to approach it, and I don't want to spend the money. I'm just scared.
If you prevent yourself from buying 10 Tamagotchis, that's a high quality keyboard right there.
I'm not buying more Tamagotchis. I promise you that.
Well, that's exactly. So, because that way you can save that money for a keyboard.
Oh, I just bought a new keyboard then, because I didn't buy 10 more Tamagotchis.
Exactly.
James, you just solved this whole problem. Well, maybe I can update you guys on my keyboard journey, or I just find a way to delete YouTube from my phone. we'll figure that out.
So, Andy, would you be open to a 10 keyless? If so, I'll recommend only you something 10 after.
Only
oh, 10 really? Keyless. All right, I was going to transition, but now I have to have a fight with you. I love the 10 key. The fuck is wrong with you two?
What's wrong with you? How much data entry are you doing?
There was a time when browsers and shit would remember your credit card number, where I could pound out my credit card number on that 10 key like it was nobody's business. Just like...
Okay, so I have the full keyboard at work, and to separate work from home as much as possible, 10 keyless just makes sense.
Sure. That's true. I agree, maybe for work.
If I'm paying $130 for a keyboard, I better get every goddamn key that's coming my way. It
takes up so much room, and then, because I move my keyboard around, right?
Plus, it's just a nice little macro area where I need it to be sometimes.
Oh, I guess. I'm not a hardcore gamer, so maybe that's why. I don't need macros, but I hear you. I understand. Still don't want it. Too big. It's too big.
I've never had anything but.
Oh.
Yours is too small.
Once I moved to a 10 keyless, I was thrilled. It was you can move it. You can move it. It's a miracle.
No, I just have a really big desk.
That's fair. That's fair. I don't know, but once you go 10 keyless, you can't go back.
Giant piece of wood that's bowing more and more by the day. Oh, no. Install the third leg in the middle, because I'm like, it shouldn't bend that much.
Ooh. It's just under the weight of your...
it's under the weight of three monitors also probably doesn't help.
You know what? That's not going to help at all.
Yeah.
But we're just too good of gamers.
Well,
too good.
Well, speaking of niche hobbies...
Yeah, let's get into it.
Let's talk about Dragon's Dogma 2.
Okay.
Dragon's Dogma 2 came out last week to...
Yes, it did.
Interesting news, but we'll cover more of that as we go. But currently an open critic sitting at an 88 with 95% of critics recommending it until they re-review it. IGN's Jarrett Green gave an 8 out of 10. More of a redo than a sequel, Dragon's Dogma 2 is a strange, wonderful action RPG that bolsters the original strength without addressing any of the weaknesses. Lewis Parker at Eurogamer gave it a 5 out of 5, a huge improvement over the original, and a captivating journey from beginning to end. And Fraser Brown at PC Gamer gave it an 89 out of 100, saying a magnificent adventure with impressive fights and some very rough edges. So here's a question. Did either of you play the original Dragon's Dogma? Or you did or did not?
I did.
You did. Okay. Did you play Dark Arisen or did you play the original?
The original.
Okay.
And this was a situation of I won't get into a friend's house and played it a few nights.
Okay. And that was it?
Yeah.
Okay. So Dragon's Dogma, it's published by Capcom. I don't know actually the studio's name that makes it. I think it's a Capcom game.
I thought it was internal.
Yeah, it's an internal Capcom studio game. The director's name is, I believe he's a Devil May Cry guy. I can't remember his name. But this is some hard ass fantasy RPG Skyrim ass bullshit. they got going here. And, you know, it kind of captured everyone. The original one kind of captured everyone's parts. I would say the big mechanic that is in this game is the ability to climb on basically every monster. Like, there's a lot of large monsters, and you can just leap up and climb all over them. Kind of Shadow of the Colossus style, but on a smaller scale, right? Think of, like, an ogre that's maybe 3 times as big as you as opposed to, like, 50 times as big as you.
Hmm.
So you can kind of just jump on, climb them, and stab them in the legs and the eyes and all that bullshit. And it's fun. Like, that's a fun part of it. But it's also just been, it's a very weird game in that kind of always Japanese sense of the director has a lot of things about it where he's like, this is the game I want to make, and this is the way I want you to play. And I think a lot of people saw the original Dragon's Dogma and went, oh, these are just rough edges. They'll work them out in the sequel. And they got Dragon's Dogma 2 and they went, oh, no, he wants you to play that way. Those aren't rough edges. Those are intentional choices.
Yeah.
One of which came out too is like, it's weird because there's a discussion of there's a lack of a fast travel system. There's not. There's 2 levels of fast travel in this game. One are these ox carts that will take you between semi-major towns. It's not as clean as just being a one location where you can pick where you go. You have to go to the ox cart on the right side of town. It'll take you to the location that you want to go. And if you're at like one location, and it only has one ox cart, it will only take you to one other location. But hey, it's something.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the ability to create these port crystals and use fairy stones, which are consumable resources to just teleport straight there. So you have the ability to drop a port crystal anywhere. Some towns have them just installed. But you can just drop one anywhere and then create a fast travel point there.
Yeah, but those are fairly rare in game.
They are very rare. Yes. I think you max out at 5 over the course of the story. I can't remember the exact number. I just got my first one in my play. I've been playing the game. I want to say about 10 hours in. Yeah, I mean, past that, it's you know, a sword and board magic fantasy RPG. You're running around, you're doing fantasy RPG bullshit. It's a fantasy RPG story where, you know, you're the chosen one, and there's a conspiracy / destiny that you have to fulfill. I don't know. It's such a weird game. I play it and I get frustrated with it, but then I always come back and be like, yeah, but I want to play a little more.
Okay. All right.
So it's kind of like whiskey. You don't like drinking whiskey, but you enjoy it enough where you're like, yeah, but I could drink some more, you know?
Yeah. And then it becomes an acquired taste.
Exactly. So I don't know. I've been having a good time with it. I don't know if I'm going to finish it or not, interestingly, but we'll have to see. But so, you know, a lot of good reviews came out, a lot of good positivity. They released their character creator ahead of the release too. And that got a lot of good feedback too, because it's a fairly deep character creator. Like, you can go pretty buck wild in there in terms of being able to like manipulate the character system and create like pretty like, Andy, actually, you might. I created Majima from Yakuza.
Oh, cool.
I follow the guide, but I did create I mean, it looks like him. Like, yeah. Even to the point of having tattoos that look pretty close to, like, the tattoos he has.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, the character creator is pretty deep. But what happened was, after release... And this has been a trait Capcom has been doing lately is they gave everybody the game for the review. They went through it, the review, gave it great reviews. Then when they released the game, they would show you the microtransactions.
Yes.
It's like, now, and it's like, stop doing that.
So I'm mixed on this one because it is all stuff you can get in game.
It is.
But like what you brought up with the port crystals and you just got your first one. You can buy as many as you want for $3 a pop.
Ooh.
I have to double check that. I thought you could buy one. Are you sure about that, Derek?
So there's some where you can only buy like one, two, or three. I'm on the Steam page right now, and it does not say it's limited.
Okay. That is sucky. I thought it was that you could just buy one, which doesn't make it better. But yeah, so they release several microtransactions. One of which is you can buy crystals to, you can buy these items that help you change your character's appearance for $2.99. You can buy that port crystal that we were just talking about for $2.99. Essentially paying for fast travel when the director came out and be like, I don't believe in fast travel in my video games, which is, it's like, you know, don't say those kind of things when you're going to charge people for fast travel.
Okay, I've got the answer. You can buy unlimited warp location markers with port crystals. You can buy 5 wake stones.
Wake stones are revival mechanics. So if you die or if you kill an NPC, you can use a wake stone to revive them.
Yep. And then you can buy 3 500 rift crystals 3 times, 1500 rift crystals 4 times, and 2500 rift crystals once.
Rift crystals are, so there's a mechanic in the game called pawns. So basically you have a sidekick who follows you around. You have a main one that you create, and then you can hire 2 extra ones from basically the pool of everyone else playing the game. So you can hire everyone's sidekick. Is this everyone's sidekick exists in an online pool that you can hire them from. Mm-hmm. And if they are a higher level than you are, they cost rift crystals. So if I'm level 18 and the one I want to hire is level 19, it'll cost me 63 rift crystals, something like that. If they're like 10 levels higher, they might cost like 1,000 rift crystals.
And it's sort of like a gacha mechanic because they're going to have different inclinations, which is going to affect how useful they are for what you want. But again, if you got a bad inclination, $2 a pop, as many times as you want, you can change them.
Now, yeah. James.
Yes.
How do you feel about these microtransactions? Because I thought you were in favor of the microtransactions for the busy young professional.
I don't love these. I don't love them because I feel as though, and it's kind of what I say, like, they talked a big game ahead of the game's release about like, you're gonna play the game I want you to play it,
sure,
you know, and then to come out and be like, hey, but also if you give me money you can play it the way you want to play it.
Gotcha.
I said I was mixed because there are some positives. I don't like how they have all this DLC for $70 $80 game. Oh no,
$70 game. Yeah,
but I like how it's only stuff in-game that you can get in-game.
Like, yeah, there is nothing you can get via microtransactions that you cannot normally acquire in-game otherwise. Although, port crystals, I think, are limited in terms of the amount the game naturally gives you.
Yes, but it's not like Monster Hunter where they got the flyest, drippiest drip that I want, and then I have to buy it because I cannot make it in-game. Like, I could not get the cat ears in game. I couldn't get the kimono in game. And then I had to spend money on those. Like, as long, like, this is fine. They can go to their investors or their board and say, we did everything in our power to maximize profits without compromising the integrity of the game. Like, yeah, sure, you can pay to win. Fine. This honestly is the, so there's 3 big controversies with Dragon's Dogma from launch. And I think the DLC is the lowest, weakest one.
Oh,
I think it's something that I would just, this is a preference. And I think in games journalism, and I don't think it's ever going to get resolved because games journalists don't have the pull for it. But
yeah, we lost the microtransaction war long ago.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I feel like if you're going to give people review codes, you should be like, here's also our microtransaction strategy.
No,
like that. It's disingenuous to a certain extent because you're not giving a full picture. Honestly, the even more scummy way to do it is to release microtransactions a month after your game comes out.
Sure.
That way, nothing, nothing's going to happen. No one's going to be able to know. But I don't know. At that point, too, it's like, well, are those microtransactions that important then if you release them a month after? I don't know. I don't feel great about this one. Nothing in it like strikes me as being egregious, but I just don't like how they necessarily went about it.
Sure.
The other thing, as Derek was going to, is, man, this game runs like dog shit.
Oh, just, sure.
This game is, oh boy, it's bad.
Are we talking
okay, so Andy,
Cyberpunk bad?
No, Andy, we're talking people with 4090s having very poor performance.
Is that the fancy
new one? That's the newest, new, best of the best.
Yeah. And they have problems?
Yes, and it's because this is a CPU-limited game, which is the problem.
So it's not supposed to be. Capcom 4 days ago came out and said that there's something wrong with how the CPU is being utilized. So there's multiple guides online of saying how to get the best settings, and they have
involves killing all your NPCs.
I was talking about the settings. That's something else that apparently it like keeps track of a bunch of NPCs at all times. And
yes.
And if you kill them, they no longer have to be tracked. So if you go for a genocide run, you're going to get the best performance.
there's actually just as another way to really just make this game. Just another example of how this game is weird and does not play it plays how it wants to play. There is a plague mechanic in this game.
Mm.
And if you're not careful with it, it can rip roar through your cities and kill every NPC, including vendors and quest important NPCs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's like, and the game's just like, oh, we fucking told you. What do you want me to do? We told you there's a plague and you didn't listen.
Hold on. Let me tell you why that's really a bad thing instead of just a funny ha-ha moment. Is that
because it softlocks the game unless you grind wake stones.
It hard locks the game at launch.
No, you can get wake stones,
but they fixed it. But you had to delete your save file before you can make an.
That's the other thing.
So
in another weird ass decision with this game, Andy, you know how like when you're playing a game and you're like, oh, you know what? I want to restart fresh or something like that. Yeah. Let me just go hit start new game and just start from the beginning. This game doesn't have it.
Really?
Once you start a game, that's it. Your only options on the main menu are load. There's no restart. You have to go, especially if you've got this on Steam. Like on console, it's actually a little easier to get a new game running, but on Steam you have to do this whole bullshit where you have to go in offline mode, turn off cloud saves, go into like the local file system and delete some shit. It's so stupid.
In what world?
They fixed it, Andy. This was not, well, it may have been intentional, but I've heard they fixed it.
Again, this is one of those play how we want you to play it, like this, like in his developer, I can entirely see the director being like, this prevents game scumming, play the game and live with your consequences.
Sure. This is very much sounding like a person's like you just described, like, this is my vision. You're going to listen to me. And you know what? When Kojima does it, it's brilliant. But
here's the thing. I wouldn't necessarily say this isn't brilliant in its own way. Like,
sure,
Kojima games are for certain kinds of people. Dragon's Dogma games are for certain types of people.
Okay.
I'm not, like, as much as this game is weird and clunky in some places, I still have fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna keep playing it, but I don't know, you know, where that journey is gonna end with me. But I do feel like this is a game that is good. Right. Sure. It's just not for everyone. And that's okay. Games don't have to be for everyone.
There you go. Yeah. It just has to find its audience. But when you're a AAA studio, can you really make games like that?
Oh, apparently, yes. Yes, you can.
I mean, it's getting reviewed well. And Capcom usually knows, like, again, it sounds like they haven't lost their good streak then. Right.
This is certainly the lowest drop. Like, there's people who are like, this is a game of the year contender. I'm like, I don't know about that. I mean, at the moment, it's a top 10.
Okay. Still pretty good. Still pretty good.
You know, if someone said to me this was the 10th best game of the year, I'd believe them. I mean, but hey, a lot of games come out in a year.
Honestly, like, let's hope less this year, please. Last year was very difficult. Just too many games.
Well, we're about to talk about three other games.
I know.
Derek, is there any other things about Dragon's Dogma you wanted to bring up?
I have not played it, so I would only be... Well, okay. Let me put out one of the gaming leaks that there's been a unconfirmed leak of the DLC.
Oh.
Potential title is Dragon's Dogma 2, The Dragon Princess.
Oh?
It's considerably bigger than Dark Arisen. It's not going to affect the base game.
Dark Arisen was the kind of the game of the year update edition of the original Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah. The new areas are a swamp and tundra in a country called Galacia. Based on European northern countries, it's going to include a lot of new monsters, and the story elements are only available once you beat the campaign.
Hmm.
But yeah, it was apparently being developed side by side with the base game towards the end of production.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't heard that.
They got a lot of confidence.
Well, let's talk about one divisive game.
Oh.
And go to another one.
Mm.
That's the PlayStation 5 exclusive, Rise of the Ronin.
Mm. I remember this one looking beautiful.
Uh-oh. Currently sitting at a 76 on OpenCritic with only 63% of critics recommending it.
Oh, what? What was I? I thought this was supposed
to be. No, you're thinking about the right one. Yeah.
Oh.
Will Borger at IGN gave it a 7 out of 10. Rise of the Ronin marries a cool setting, Team Ninja's mastery of tough but fair combat, and smart RPG design, even when the map clutter and junk loot gets in its way. GameSpot's Phil Hornshaw gave it a 7 out of 10. Though it has a somewhat steep combat learning curve and some dated open world ideas, Rise of the Ronin does a great job rewarding your time in its world. And then David Rodriguez at Hobby Consolas.
Hmm.
I always like picking. This is a Spanish review.
Yeah.
Translated to English. If you're not careful with a sharp katana, you risk cutting yourself. Luckily, Rise of the Ronin achieves itself with a sublime combat and a very attractive story for lovers of most samurai Japan. There are significant shortcomings, but Team Ninja makes a much more precise cut than imagined with this ambitious game.
They ran with that metaphor.
I know. Wow.
Yeah. But most of the criticism boils down to the open world being fairly devoid of love or points of interest. So you've got Team Ninja's amazing combat and like unique encounters, but then it's just a dead world.
Open world to be open world, because there are other ones. If I remember, like Neo and stuff was not open world; they were all mission based.
They're open levels, I think, is maybe the way to think about it. So Neo is closer to say a Demon Souls, if you want to think about it that way, or Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm.
Wukong was more traditionally a Dark Souls game, which is also Team Ninja. Although I think actually be closer to Sekiro, I think Wukong is. And then you have Rise of the Ronin, which is actually somewhat, if you like, took Neo and smashed it together with Assassin's Creed.
Oh, okay.
Especially the more newer Assassin's Creeds. Because like stealth combat is a thing in this game where, you know, if you want, you can really approach, like, you can, I've heard people say, like, you turn the difficulty down to, like, you know, not even, like, you know, the one below normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stealth becomes just a superpower in this game where you were just running around stabbing fools like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Man, now that you brought up the difficulty, though, I'm plagued with memory of me playing Ninja Gaiden 1 as a child.
Derek, I broke an Xbox Duke controller playing Ninja Gaiden.
So I was playing on easy and I died so much. They're like, do you want to lower the difficulty to like dog? I can't remember I was like Ninja Dog or something, but it was just like, yeah, we can make it a little bit easier for you. So, and then I was just like, I need to get good.
And Team Ninja made Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of when that made Team Ninja, right? What did they work on?
Dead or Alive is kind of put them on the map. And then Ninja Gaiden. Right. Yeah.
That's right.
And then Ninja Gaiden was like their step out of fighting games into action games.
That game taught me that I hate boss rush. Like that is the worst thing. I remember at the very end of it, just fighting all the bosses in the row. And I was like, this is cheap. This is not fun. And this is lazy. And ever that, like, oof, that triggers me. Oof. Ooh, I hate it. Ooh. But anyways, that game stuck with all of us.
Yeah. I feel like what a lot of the criticism I've heard about this game is just that, you know, the open world's kind of boring. Like I guess it's that idea of respecting your time. Dragon's Dogma both respects and doesn't give a shit about your time. It creates a world where you are always doing what it wants you to do, whether or not you think that's worth your time is up to you. Rise of the Ronin has created a world where it's just like, I don't know, do whatever the fuck you want, man.
Yeah. So
I think people are not overly critical because the criticism is completely valid. But the world doesn't look any worse than an Assassin's Creed release.
Although I don't know. This isn't Team Ninja has always been, which is weird considering Dead or Alive and Ninja Gaiden. But lately, between Nioh and Wukong, like their games haven't looked the best lately. And Rise of the Ronin isn't necessarily any better on that. Like this has, you know, early PS4 gen graphics. And, you know, there's a discussion to be had of like, well, you know, every game doesn't have to be a graphical powerhouse, but I don't know. It just feels weird. It feels weird for a game to have kind of dated graphics now. I mean, that might be something that we just have to reset our expectations for.
Sure.
As we move forward and trying to get like games budgets under control.
Very good point.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, for where we are right now. I mean, the closest analogs to this game, like we said, Assassin's Creed, which, you know, say what you want about them. They're pretty games. And Ghost of Tsushima, which is beautiful fucking game.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Nioh, right? But that's also a Team Ninja game. So
I'm not upset with the graphics because I've heard not one complaint about performance of stuttering, frame drop.
That's true. That's true.
Those would be rage inducing in this kind of game.
Yeah.
So Team Ninja, there's obviously people in the industry who are optimizing beautiful games to not have any of those issues, and they could do the same, but that would cost a lot of resources and development. And like, the gameplay is fun enough on its own. I think if they just dropped the open world aspect, they probably could have optimized the performance and graphics instead of having a lot of fluff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Open, I don't know. I think it
fun. I just don't understand. I just ugh. It's sad that it ended up just hurting this game.
I've seen a lot of like praise for the combat. I mean, like Nioh 2, Nioh 2 had a lot of praise. Wukong had a lot of praise for its combat. I've heard this carries over in Rise of the Ronin, where it's like, if you want to engage with the combat system, it is deep and it is challenging and it is fun, which makes me kind of want to play Rise of the Ronin, but I'm also where like, I don't want to pay $70 for Rise of the Ronin.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that game will probably go on sale in a couple months because, you know, and then, although it's PS5 exclusive, so who knows, but yeah, it's certainly in a game where it's like, hey, wait a little while and maybe you'll get something about it. I mean, that's been me in all the Nioh games. I think I only played the first Nioh game on release. I played Nioh 2 much later. I still haven't played Wukong, which I should. It's on Game Pass, the best deal in gaming.
Shut up.
So yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where too many games, and not necessarily, if it's not the best experience, I'm not necessarily in a rush to play it.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Oh, too bad.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of not the best games, and it's just, we're just getting lower as we go, unfortunately. also last week we saw the release of Princess Peach Showtime.
Yeah.
Made currently sitting at a 76 on OpenCritic with only 59% of critics recommending it.
Yeah.
Ashley Barden, a Eurogamer, gave it a 4 out of 5. Nintendo's second ever Peach game finally realizes the character is destined for smart level design and center stage. Logan Plant at IGN gave it a 7 out of 10. Princess Peach Showtime is a simple, cheery romp, with a variety of meat styles and a fun feeder inspired setting. And then Steve Watts at GameSpot gave it a 7 out of 10. Princess Peach Showtime is a breezy exploration of genres aimed at novice gamers. So
interesting. Let me just start off with the joke.
Okay. Go for it.
Nintendo's gone woke. No.
Why? I haven't heard this. I haven't heard this joke. What you expound?
Well, no. Every time Nintendo, like the same kind of fake outrage or whatever came out with the movie, it was like, oh my God, it's gone woke. And it's just like, just shut up and sit down and don't use that word anymore.
Yeah. Can we just stop using that word?
So this game is, and the movie are highlighting Peach's ability to
because it's a female strength. Main character.
Yeah, she's no longer damsel in distress 99% of the time. She's growing as a character. And that's
so a good I actually watched a 99.9% full playthrough of this game. Oh. It's only about 10 hours.
Okay.
And that means basically the Let's Player I watched, or the streamer I watched, got all the hidden items on every level.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, completed the game. After you complete the game, there's some extra bullshit where you can redo levels and find more things. And, you know, he was like, all right, I don't need to do that to completion. But I saw him, you know, do everything for 10 hours. And, you know, here's what I'll say. One, poorly optimized to the point.
Really?
Yeah, the loading screens have stutter, which is the stupidest thing in the world. But yeah, this game runs a little sloppily. Past that, I think we talked about this with Kirby's Forgotten Lands, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where it's kind of like, this is another one of those Nintendo games where it's like, it is here to introduce kids to like 3D platforming and adventure games.
Mm-hmm.
Although Kirby had kind of a more adult, like hardcore gamer mode, this game lacks that.
And strong themes of anti-capitalism.
This game loves capitalism.
No!
Yeah. But honestly, like, this is a good product from Nintendo. Is it a quote unquote good game? Debatable. Is it a good strategy to have a game that's very playable by the younger audience?
Yeah.
I think yes. Like, you can't just keep catering to the adults who played Nintendo as a kid. There's new kids.
I think there's a middle ground. And like Kirby, there's a middle ground where you can make a game that's good for kids and adults. This game certainly leans more on the kid side than the adult side.
Well, and I mean, it's aimed at kids, but also it looks like a lot of work was put into making it like creative and fun, which is what interested me about the game, is that it just looks really cool.
It does. And I would say the individual levels have a lot of life and interest to them, although some are more boring than others.
No, which is fair. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't win
like,
them all.
Like there's one where Peach is a baker. Those are kind of slog. And there's one where Peach is kind of like a Sherlock like detective. Those are a little boring. But then there's also one where like she's a sword fighter and she's a figure skater. Or she's a kung fu master. And those are really fun, entertaining levels, even just for me watching them. Right.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, these seem fun.
I think that's kind of what I was expecting. I have a friend going through it right now too. And basically his impression right now, it kind of lines up with yours, is that it's really cool looking, really creative, beautiful, and the gameplay is just okay.
Yeah.
And does just okay to us mean fun for a kid, right? Like, maybe that's just what it is. And so that reminded me of Kirby. And we all know I became obsessed with Forgotten Land, obsessed with that game. And it wasn't the most difficult, but it was just a joy to play. And I know it sounds like this one might not be a joy to play, but a joy to look at. So I'm debating. I don't know if I'll play it, but it certainly looks interesting. Do you think you would enjoy playing it, James?
Well, it's going to be $60 for the rest of its life. So yeah. You can decide to play it now or later. You're going to pay the same amount of money.
That's true.
You can always go to GameStop and get it for $55.
I could. Is that the used car? Oh, I read about GameStop today. They're not doing well.
Yeah, GameStop had some issues.
Yeah.
We don't have to go into it, but they had a bad quarter.
They had a bad quarter. But I was hoping this was going to gear more towards that it also appealed to adults more, but it doesn't have to, right? And I'm happy it exists. It looks super fun, creative, colorful, and good for it. But only 59% recommend. So it's trash.
Well, that 59% is better than 28%.
Yeah.
For South Park Snow Day, new game from THQ Nordic in question, currently sitting at a 63 on Open Critic with only 28% of critics recommending it. PC Gamer gave it a Rich Stanton at PC Gamer gave it a 69. Nice. Out of 100. A charming but slight co-op action game where a basic combat system is elevated by clever bonuses and abilities, and half the pleasure is the world's incidental details. IGN's Travis Northup gave it a 3 out of 10. Ooh. Aggravating hack and slash combat and surprisingly sparse jokes make South Park Snow Day dull, toothless, and a big step in the wrong direction for South Park games. And let's see. Steve Boxer at Metro Game Central gave it a 7 out of 10. A clever and well-structured interpretation of the classic TV series as a co-op brawler that would be a fun diversion even without the license. So I actually watched someone play a lot of this game too recently. This is how I absorb these games that I don't want to play. Watch streamers play them. So I think it... It's very much like it is a co-op action brawler. Games of that ilk are Myth Forest, which you may or may not be familiar with. And no. I'm trying to think of another one.
So I want to expand your description of it. It's also a roguelite, which most
it is also a roguelite, reviews yes.
seem to have not gotten the like understood that. Now, that doesn't mean this is a game suddenly worth recommending, but I think it has replayability. I think it was enjoyable to watch someone play, and I think the really poor reviews are just like this game did not deserve a 3 out of 10 whatsoever.
Ooh,
and some reviews went that low.
Did it deserve a 69?
I'd say 69 is ballpark.
I think it doesn't have quite the narrative chops that the Fractured Butthole
God, and the Stick of Truth so good
and the Stick of Truth to have. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the narrative focus isn't quite there. It drags you a little more towards the story is there to push the combat. Like, it's if you know what I mean, where it's like. It's set dressing for the game, whereas I think the other two games where it's like the combat was a greater part of the narrative, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
This is more like the other way around where it's like, hey, you did this combat. Now we'll give you a little taste of the story.
Sure.
They're separate in that way, right?
So all three games are separate game types. Like
that's true.
So the roguelite model, I think, highlighting the gameplay, is something that some people really enjoy. And if you're judging this as how much aligns with previous games and you're expecting something like the previous games, yeah, you're going to think it's bad. But on its own, I think it's okay.
Not necessarily just like, oh, it's the game type is different, so it's bad. I think it's more of just how they use the, like, there's a way to have made this game where the narrative was more intertwined with the gameplay sections, I think, is what I'm trying to get at. This feels more like the narrative and the combat are disparate. So you end up not being as interested as one or the other. Like, I think people play this game just to, they get through the combat to get to the narrative. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if it's going to be a South Park game, you're the world and the characters and the story they built. That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would just be any other game. And plus, it doesn't help that the other two games were so strong.
Yeah.
To give those expectations. I was a little bit excited for this because I love the other ones and I love South Park.
Plus, it's co-op, so you could play it with your friends. But
yeah.
There is one last thing I'll say in its defense. It's a $30 game.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's true. It is a $30 game. Yeah.
So
oh.
Dragon's Dogma is $70, and this one's $30. And I think
Ronin 70, yeah. Prince of Peach is 60.
So I think price per point, like I think Open Critic is artificially low. So I think dollar per fun, South Park is above the last two we've spoken on.
Are you a South Park fan, Derek?
I haven't watched it in years.
Oh, I love it. I was actually thinking, is
TikTok South loves Park serving it to me lately?
What's that?
TikTok loves serving the episodes of South Park.
South Park is incredible. And I was thinking about, is South Park better than The Simpsons?
No, but that's okay.
After a certain point, yes. But don't you dare compare the first 10 seasons to South Park.
I know where you live. Really good. And it's still good. At least Simpsons. I think it's very good.
Simpsons is better now, actually. The last couple seasons of Simpsons have been.
It is?
Yeah, but they lost all my trust. Sorry, you can't just spend almost 20 years putting out trash.
It's fair. It's
been a lot of trash. Would you rather have more Simpsons or more South Park?
I mean, aren't they still making South Park?
They are.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting both still.
No, this is a hypothetical. I need you to choose. I want everybody to want more South Park. I love South Park. I never want it to go away. Simpsons, I haven't watched in years. Who am I to judge?
We'll make Derek choose on another episode of Add to Party.
You better choose.
Friendship Simulator Masquerading as a new show. I've been your host, James. Dragon's Dogma is a good 10. Hartwell. And I've been joined by
Andy. Well, I'm not an apologist. I was going to say South Park apologist. South Park stan. I'm a stan.
Edgelord. Okay.
What's that?
Edgelord.
Edgelord. I am not an edgelord. Okay, maybe first three seasons I would have been. Listen, South Park is thoughtful and topical. How dare you? And very centrist. And I'm not a centrist. I'm a leftist. That's it. Andy Leftist K. and I've been joined by
Derek.
Derek, that's that may have been one of my favorite ones in a while.
I think you're absolutely right.
Also, say your last name.
I did, Costia.
Oh, sorry, I was just laughing.
Yeah, y'all were laughing over me.
Have a good night.
Have a good night.
Later.
Bye.